This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back again to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this vast and always expanding network of music swamis doing podcasts. Of course, myself and John Gaffney have a new one on here called Kicked in the Teeth, an AC/DC podcast. We just put up our third episode. Check that out. But yes, available on Spotify, iTunes, Podbay, Podbean, all over the place. Okay, so this is episode 253. I'm calling this Albums That Don't Deserve the Love. Now, that's a little vague, but, you know, again, the idea is going to be here, is going to be conceptual with this. I'm going to have a lot of examples, but I don't want to say, this isn't just about overrated albums sort of thing. I was also going to call this, my other title for this, and this gets a little deeper into the concept, is Albums Everybody Tries Extra Hard to Love. Okay, so it's not just straight overrated, but it's like, and again, this proved to be a good idea because I went through tons and tons and tons of bands. You could almost do the flip side episode. I'm going to talk about this concept a little, but I went through tons of bands where I realized they don't have any of these. And one of the main reasons you won't have any of these in a catalog is that the band has not built up a particularly large amount of goodwill, and it's more like you're going to tend not to overrate these albums because of the dirty laundry, the backstory. Maybe you know these guys are dicks or that sort of thing, right? You know, picture yourself standing there as a fan confronting this band that you love or whatever, you want to love more or whatever, but you're standing there with your arms crossed, right? You know, that whole thing about the big city concert crowds, right? Oh, they just stood there, you know, they didn't react kind of thing. So you're standing there with your arms crossed and you're saying, okay, prove that I should love this album. So this is kind of the opposite, right? This is more like, you know, you really wanted to love this album. You put in the effort. So let me go through my notes here and tell you some sort of, other contours or concepts, the way to look at this before we get into our examples. So you're twisting yourself into pretzels, trying to tell yourself that this is a good album. So this is the fans gathering on the internet, and it's and they're all trying to convince themselves that this is a good album when it's really crap. And again, the idea is you've built up a lot of goodwill, right? So so there's a lot of hype, but it just ain't that good. So people are trying to put extra effort and rationalize it. You can tell your heart isn't in it, right? This is sometimes on these shows when I say things like, my head is telling me one thing and my heart is telling me another thing about this album, right? So you're trying to intellectualize your way into loving it, but your heart just isn't into it. You always see the same phrases come up. It's okay. It's not bad. I have no problem with it. It grows on you. It grew on me. I just had to play it a few more times. All these things, right, are red flags that it's just not a very good album. So these are albums that don't deserve the love, or albums everybody tries extra hard to love. Or another excuse is it's a good album, but they shouldn't have put that band name on it. You know, under a different name, or if they put it out as a solo album, we would all like it more. That kind of thing, right? Or it's a good album of that period. Against everything that came around it, sort of thing. So, you know, more concepts that we're going to get to as we go along here, but to keep it general. So these guys are geniuses. I trust them. You know how we've done the two previous episodes on genius and a different kind of genius. Let's see what else. You know, there's other things where this, you know, comes into the idea that, you know, we could do big comparisons with how these albums were received at the time. So sometimes a lot of these albums, another red flag is that they were reviled at the time. They got bad reviews at the time. But over time, over the decades, there's been, quote unquote, a rehabilitation of this album, right? And it's, oh, it's not as bad as the critics thought it was kind of thing. Or, a lot of these are the idea that right off the bat, we obviously, you know, everybody's kind of stunned and thinking it's crap. And what you see on the internet and on Facebook is you see that initial correct reaction on the album. And then all of a sudden the pendulum is just veering wildly back and forth. You get a bunch of people infectiously causing a love in at it. And then someone else says, no, it's not, you know, and then people pile on and agree with that person that it's not very good kind of thing. You know, so other ways to look at this is it looked great on paper. The players, the timing was right. You were surprised it wasn't that good. So, you know, you're inclined to want this, right? You're inclined to want to love this album. It's albums everybody tries hard to love. Another final one before we get to our first example is you give the band the benefit of the doubt, right? So when you're giving the band the benefit of the doubt, you're saying there is doubt. But because you have goodwill built up on this band, you are giving them the benefit of the doubt. So, okay, so let's go through this. These are kind of loose categories, and I'm giving some of it away here. But let's listen to our first selection here. This is Queen with The Hitman. Okay, so the category here is roughly speaking this idea of you have so much goodwill towards the band. So innuendo is one of the first ones that has come to mind. I've talked about this album before, right? You know, I listened to The Hitman, and this song just sounds like this idea of, oh, we have to write a song like the good old heavy days and put everything in and completely change the production and arrangement ideas we completely believe in. We've proven over the last four albums and put that aside and just write one for the fans kind of thing, right? And, you know, do you really want to hear Freddie Mercury talking about a hitman? So this album, you know, you know, I think here's the other thing that happens with this. So on the goodwill front, so this is Queen, right? You want Queen to be heavy. It's a little bit of a heavier album. You know, the tragic story, it turns out to be the last, you know, Queen album. Freddie dies. So you've got death mixed into this. I'm going to talk a little bit more about death a little later. The other funny thing that happens with this album is, basically, when people think about this album, they literally just think about the title track, and they love the fact that, oh, they compared to Kashmir and all this, and it's heavy and it's epic and it's long and all that. But people forget there's a lot of crappy songs on here. And I also feel like even the other kind of main attempt at trying to sound heavy, like, oh, we're coming back, we're making a heavy album, is Headlong. And I've never liked Headlong. I've just always thought the chorus was dumb. The verses are kind of dumb. I don't like seeing that word headlong with, you know, no dash or anything in it. But Hitman is the same kind of thing. The two H songs, right? The Canadian H bands, right? So that's one that I feel fits this. So innuendo, February 4th, 1991, Freddie dies. What is it? November 1991, I believe. So other ones, you know, the one that kind of made me think about this whole category and doing this show is Blue Oyster Cult Ghost Stories. It's just come out. You know, obviously it's an odds and sods. It's a demos fixed up with AI. It's kind of weird. Like their AI is fixing up the, you know, the production, and they've you know, parachuted in a few new vocals, and these are demos of songs done from 78 to 83. The weird thing is, you know, we knew all the Blue Oyster Cult rarities, and we all obsess over them, but none of these songs ever came up, right? And then you got We Gotta Get Out of This Place Again, and you've got Kick Out the Jams Again, you got a Beatles cover, which is new. So it's a verifiable mess. I played the whole thing. I went outspoken and said, I can't find a single 10-second space of music on this whole album that I like, let alone songs. But you just saw it happen, right? You saw a whole pile of negative reviews, then you saw a whole pile of positive reviews, and then you saw people saying, starting to pick out songs and saying, oh, I like this. You know, the tacit message there is like, I only like two songs when you start pulling out songs. But again, the idea is there's a lot of goodwill towards the band because we all love Blue Oyster Cult. They're probably my favorite band. And you get this with Club Ninja too. You get this with the Imaginos album. You know, we've done on the Contrarians all these panel shows where you've taken an album and talked about the album for a whole hour. You know, these Dark Horse series things, right? So when you have a lot of goodwill towards a band, you are more inclined to trust them and say, you know, they know what they're doing. This must be a form of genius. Another one that I always think of in this department, it's a little bit of a weird one, but Rush Feedback, right? So there's a lot of goodwill, obviously a legendary amount of goodwill for Rush. So they put out, A, it's an EP, B, it's terrible choices of songs that nobody wants to hear. We've heard these songs a million times before. They're just trampled travel territory. And C, I'll go to D. C, the production ain't great. And D, the playing is pretty unimaginative. There's nothing really, you know, this is supposed to be a creative band, and there's nothing creative about these covers. So, but people will, you know, twist themselves into pretzels and praise and say feedback is kind of an okay thing. So that's the idea there. I think you feel the same way a little bit about AC/DC. You know, when you get to Rock or Bust, you know, I don't like that album at all, but I see people, you know, basically saying it's a pretty, you know, another example is Iron Maiden Senjutsu. So you put these two together. The idea here is that there's so much goodwill for these bands. You are just happy that they're making some music. I'll take anything from these guys at all. It's usually, AC/DC's worse, but it's a long stretch between albums. So you're just happy to get this new music, some AC/DC music's better than no AC/DC music. Same thing with the Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones are worse than AC/DC, I suppose, in terms of spreading out the albums, but similar. Iron Maiden's been very, you know, admirable in this. They put out, you know, a fair bit of new music, right? So these big old institutions fit into this category as well, where and like I say, not everybody's like this. I went through a lot of bands. Van Halen's a good example, where there isn't a lot of goodwill built up for Van Halen. So it's more the arms crossed thing. But with the Stones, with Iron Maiden, with AC/DC, we are more inclined to love it. We are more inclined to be in a good mood and be favorable about it than we are to be show me. About it kind of thing is my point. And a few isolated examples that I feel are perfect for this category. Extreme with the sixth album, 2023. Goodwill built up towards Extreme. We want to love Extreme. That album came out. We just try to talk ourselves into liking it, and it's just not very good, right? You know, I hate using that term, not very good. I try to be objective about these things, but basically speaking, a lot of people didn't find a lot to like about it. And there are other famous examples, you know, from my own experience. Loved to death that first Masters of Reality album, the self-titled, and then Sunrise on the Suffer Bus comes out with that cool, you know, even the front cover is pretty cool with the bunny on the bike, I think it is. Ginger Baker's in the band, but it was such a letdown after the first one, right? But again, this isn't about just talking about albums I don't like, or disappointing albums or whatever, or underrated or overrated in particular. It's about the idea of you want to try love these things so much because you've got so much goodwill built up towards them. And you know, we did episode 60, which was Give the People What They Want. And this was a story about when bands give you that heavy album that you wanted. So it's the heaviness story, but it kind of fits in here just to mention as well. Because of these guys coming back with these heavy albums, you want to like them so much because you asked for them. You've been complaining for years about them not doing one. When they come back and do it, you throw yourself into it a little more and you wish you liked them a little more, but you don't. And our examples that we had there were Thin Lizzy, Thunder and Lightning. We had Iggy Pop. We played Easy Rider from Instinct. We covered Ale Page. That's going to fit another category here. DLR Band, right? David Lee Roth comes back with a heavy album. You want to love it. You want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but you just felt the songs weren't really there. And then Van Halen itself with David Lee Roth with A Different Kind of Truth, where, again, the funny thing here is that it doesn't fit the example of goodwill. I don't think there was a ton of goodwill going into that Van Halen album. They're sort of a neutral band because of all these things I talk about with Dirty Laundry, and you hear, you know, and maybe they're not such a fans band kind of thing. And then when they come back, so it's not like overflowing love and you're just going to try really hard to like this. It's a little bit of a show me, but on the other hand, it fits our heaviness story where it's like you want to love it because they are rocking out. Right? So that's a kind of a different thing. Okay, so let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back. All right, back again here, History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. This is our Albums That Don't Deserve the Love, episode 253. Let's take a listen to our second track here and we shall discuss. This is Black Sabbath with Letters from Earth. Okay, so the category here is a little bit more, the story is so good. It's a collaboration. It's a reunion. We just love the narrative going into this album. So we're loving the idea already. The idea, the concept, even before we hear a note, we are willing ourselves to love this album. So this is from Dehumanizer, June 22nd, 1992. It's another one that always comes to mind when I think vaguely along this concept line. You know, we all want to love the fact that it is literally the Mob Rules Band back together again, 10 years later, I guess, with the live, the tour in there. But essentially, they're coming back. You just want to love to death this album, right? And I just see it time and time and time again, everybody grappling with it, right? You got your people who claim they love it, people that are more honest about not loving it. I'm kind of in the middle. There's a bunch of songs I really like, but you know, it's, you know, the funny thing that happens with some of these records is you might be walking around with the mind space that you love it or walking around with the mind space that you don't love it. For me, I'm walking around with the mind space a little more that I don't love it, and then when I come back and play it, I'm pleasantly surprised. So sometimes you're surprised, but most of the time you're validated and you go, now I remember why, you know, 4 songs in a row that I don't like or whatever, right? And you end up validated about it. Funny one, Ted Nugent, Intensities in 10 Cities. I just realized the whole first side of that's actually pretty good. It's the whole second side completely falls flat. But that's one where you love the story of, wow, Ted's putting out a whole album in kind of the golden period, my favorite period of the band, that 79 to 80 period. He's coming out with a whole live album of original songs. That's a cool concept. I'm going to want to love this. And then you don't. And then, big supergroup things like Checkered Past. You might not remember what that one is, but it's kind of like a punk ragtag supergroup. And along those lines, I think of people like Them Crooked Vultures, Audio Slave, Velvet Revolver, Asia, you might put in here as well, although I don't really have to put them in, Coverdale Page. But a perfect example, I think, is Them Crooked Vultures, Audio Slave, and Velvet Revolver. So again, you're just looking at this, wow, Scott Whelan fronting Guns N' Roses? Amazing, sign me up kind of thing, right? Chris Cornell on Rage Against the Machine, John Paul Jones and Josh Homme. Wow. You think this is incredible on paper. You want to love it. You just hope it's so good. And then they put it together and you're not pleased with it. Another actually great one here is the Queen plus Paul Rodgers album, right? There's another one where you're cheering them on. It's like, how dare you do something so crazy like this? I hope it's awesome. And then it's terrible, right? So that happens. Back to Blue Oyster Cult, you think of the Buck Dharma solo album, flat out. We all try super hard to love that, but then when you start breaking it down, you're like, ah. Kind of like half of it, and then half of it I definitely don't like, sort of thing. But we all go back and mythologize these things because there's only one Buck Dharma solo album, right? It's a major label album. It's got a cool album cover. It's put out in kind of their golden period. You're in there. You're wanting to love it, but you have to try super hard. Another idea or band example here is UFO with Walk on Water with Michael Schenker, and then Sharks at Covenants, and you're like, these are kind of like damp squibs, right? It's like you hope, although Walk on Water, yeah, it's got some amazing songs in it, but the follow-ups are nobody sort of talks about them. But we all tried super hard, right? We all tried to like them, and even more so, same kind of thing, the Vinnie Moore era of UFO. I'm just not hearing the songs there that I like. I'm not hearing any of that Euro-Teutonic thing. But, you appreciate that they keep coming back time and time again, and they put together all those studio albums. So you're trying hard. You're upset at yourself. You love this band. You're just ticked off. You're disappointed that you're not liking these albums more. And again, another example of it doesn't always work. So you think of Joe Perry Project. We've got Joe Perry on the mind because we've been doing these Sea of Tranquility ranking shows. We're mashing catalogs together. But we all love, the first one's an absolute masterpiece. Second one's really, really good. And then when you get to the third one, basically nobody likes it, and I don't think it's very good either, so it's kind of unanimous on it, but it's not that everybody is upset about that. So it's almost like, okay, well, there's not a lot of goodwill built up for the Joe Perry Project that we're all really, really just poured out that we can't like the third Joe Perry Project album. And I wanted to say, again, to bring up the flip side of this idea, there's also the opposite too, where even Audio Slave and Velvet Revolver, you could say some people had the arms crossed thing, right? It's like, it's a corporate put together super group. Prove it to me. Show me, right? And Motley Crue is kind of the same way, and Megadeth is sort of the same way. But I wanted to say on a positive flip is sometimes, okay, say you're going in with a total negative I'm more inclined not to like this, or even go so far to say I'm going to be disappointed if this is really good because I do not approve of this concept, right? So it can happen that, say, Motley Crue is a great example because there's a lot of ill will built up to Motley Crue about the squabbling and the Mick Mars situation and the tapes and Vince Neil phoning it in and not singing the lyrics and holding his mic out. So many things, Nikki Sixx, so many ill will things applied to Motley Crue that if Motley Crue makes an absolutely great album, there's going to be a lot of people who will not acknowledge that, right? Who just will be more inclined to complain than the idea of this concept where we are trying so hard to love these albums, sort of thing. You know, I've always said this concept applies to that band Warrior Soul. You want to love those albums more. The lyrics are great. The whole, the consistent packaging, the name of the band. Corey is such a cool dude. But the music is kind of boring and kind of stiffly recorded. So there's a whole concept that you want to love. And reaching way back in time, Dust feels that way with those two amazing album covers. The song Suicide, the idea of who's in the band and the Kerner Wise. You love the story, you love the narrative, but the music's not there. But people will swear up and down those two albums are absolute classics because they just try so hard because they love the story, right? And then the death concept, I think, is a bit of a sub one of this, of the story, the narrative, right? So people want to love Come Taste the Band a lot because of Tommy Bolin and his tragic story, and it's the only Deep Purple album he's on, and even the Tommy Bolin albums for that matter. I mean, that's even more extreme example of that, right? Private Eyes and Teaser. A Gary Moore catalog, I feel there's a little bit too much romance applied to that. People are trying to love those albums more because of the story of Gary being no longer with us. I even feel like Little Feet belongs here. Those last couple of albums with Lowell George, I don't think are as good as the reunion era Little Feet, and even more so, I think reunion era without Lowell George Little Feet is better in the second half than even the first half. So I have a lot of time for that band, and the early stuff's absolutely classic, but I think people romanticize because of the passing of Lowell George those later ones a little more. Okay, so let's move on to our third selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Rush with Carnies. Okay, so the category here is concept albums, and I feel this is a funny one where I kind of felt, so I can fall for it too, right? I can get swept up in the excitement, and now I'm not liking this album all that much anymore. But I think this happens with concept albums a lot, where a band gives you a concept album, you want to love it because it's like, oh, they're going to go full hog on this. We've always wanted a concept album from these bands. You're loving the story. And then when they put it out, you're not crazy about it. Dio Magica kind of fits this as well, where you think concept albums are natural for him. He puts it out. It's his legendary slow period of the band where things are played at a slow tempo. Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, I feel this as well. This is one where people say it's the greatest Genesis album or not, but the story is completely bizarre and it just ties you up and you tie yourself up like a pretzel trying to love this album when it doesn't perhaps deserve it. Bluest Cult Imaginos is a perfect example of this as well. That's a hodgepodge, dog's breakfast of an album. Judas Priest Nostradamus, we all wanted to love Nostradamus, and then when they put it out, it's kind of got a lot of slow mid-tempo stuff, too much interlude things, and the production's kind of that interesting period of Glenn Tipton type production. Kiss the Elder, and that fits a future concept here that we're going to talk about. But again, you want to love it because they're being deep. Yes, Tales from Topographic Oceans, this one's had the up and down reputation, but people still try super hard to love it. They try to put in the work, and they will twist themselves into pretzels thinking it's a great thing. A bit of a subcategory here is just the idea of genius period. My buddy Ed Whitmore, who we talked about last episode, has brought up Radiohead, Kid A, and other difficult music that made me think of Public Image Limited, right? So you try super hard to love this because you think it's good for you. You think it's deep. You think you are an intellectual if you can get into this music. So you try and try and try and try. So that is the concept of this episode. All right. So let's move on to our fourth category here. Take a listen to this. This is Kiss with Easy As It Seems. Okay, so the category here is we've overanalyzed this band to death so much that you eventually have to go deep, right? And Kiss is the perfect example of that. So we have had the full-on rehabilitation of Dynasty. We've had a pretty darn good rehabilitation of Unmasked. All we did in the 80s is kind of complain about Kiss through the 80s, but yet all those 80s albums are now seen as semi-serious works of art. Let's not go too overboard here. But yeah, we've all spent a lot of time talking about all these dark horse, quote-unquote, Kiss albums and try to look. And, you know, if you want to be super extreme about it, well, let's go second level first, the Kiss 1978 solo albums. We've all, you know, seriously analyzed those and studied them, and all of a sudden the Ace Frehley is a, you know, well, not all of a sudden, but we've always talked about it as a great album. But is it, you know, really deserving? You know, there has been some backlash on Kiss recently saying, you know, haven't we over-talked about Kiss? But, you know, if you want to get super extreme about it, I even see people say, oh, I like those Peter Criss solo albums, Out of Control and Let Me Rock You and all that kind of stuff, right? And sometimes these people are just trying to get a rise and trying to be contrarian. That's a whole nother thing people talk about. Yeah, the contrarian thing with me and the, you know, the fact that we have the show like that. But Alice Cooper, The Blackout Period, same kind of thing where we, you know, those albums were universally reviled. They didn't sell for a long, long time. Nobody said there was anything good on those albums. But because they're just sitting there ready for reexamination, we do examine them and we consider them to be serious art in a way. You know, there's an abstract concept here where, you know, you can pull yourself away and say it is just 3 minutes of sound moving through invisible air where, you know, who knows what a good song is or not. You know, there is no real truth to this. So again, there's a little bit of you are on board with the artist, you are considering them a genius or you know, at least a good artist, that you trust their instincts and this must be good and I'm just not getting it, so you try harder kind of thing, right? Led Zeppelin is an interesting case where, you know, sometimes the catalog is short and, you know, in combination with being so overanalyzed that eventually every song is considered genius and it will definitely get a lot of deep consideration over time. You know, the idea of you think of Judas Priest Point of Entry or Turbo, where sometimes you think, okay, so now it's time to add one more to my canon of the greats, right? Because I've been talking about them for so many years. They keep putting out a lot of albums. Good number of those maybe I'm not totally on board with. So Point of Entry don't look so bad no more. So I'm adding that to my canon. So you work a little harder to rationalize and argue for the fact that Point of Entry is great art kind of thing, right? Okay, let's move on to our last example here. Take a listen to this. This is The Clash with Movers and Shakers. All right, so this is from the Cut the Crap album, November 4th, 1985. So the category here is I'm guilty of this too. So I actually quite like the Cut the Crap album. And you know why? So I think it's just because I just got to hear Joe Strummer's voice some more, right? I just love the fact that there is at least some more Joe Strummer to cherish out there. I've kind of always liked it more than the previous album anyways, Combat Rock. But yeah, and then you go into the, oh, but I would love to hear a remix of this. And then you start saying, oh, I wish AI could fix this or someone would remix it and blah, blah, blah. And put in the real drums, remove the drums, put it. So you start playing with these albums and that's a red flag, because the album is not that. You're trying to make it better than it is sort of thing. So I am guilty of this. I feel like I'm guilty of this as well when I profess my love for Black Sabbath Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die so much, and even Blue Oyster Cult Mirrors, because, so here's the point. These are two of my favorite bands of all time. I love everything they do. I trust them as artists. I think they're great artists. So even when they put out stuff that objectively out there in the world, like say Never Say Die, most people think is crap, I think it's absolute genius. I love it start to finish. One of my favorite Black Sabbath albums, period. But yeah, I'm guilty of this too. What am I guilty of here? Let's go back to the title here just to, so albums that don't deserve the love. So yeah, so my title is Albums That Don't Deserve the Love. So am I saying Never Say Die doesn't deserve the love? What I'm saying is I love it, so I'm guilty of this idea, and maybe it doesn't deserve the love on an objective level. So here's something else I wanted to bring up. So we're doing these panel books, and my buddy Ralph, and even Doug Mayer to some extent, I feel is guilty of this. So they belong with me in this category number five here. Ralph has this idea that once you love that artist and you do think they're genius, you have to trust their journey. I guess I've kind of said this, in a roundabout way anyways, but he can speak so eloquently about, you know, We Can't Dance or Invisible Touch or Phil Collins solo albums, because he just loves Phil Collins so much. And yet he can convince you, but you're not convinced, kind of in a way. Like, he can convince me to a point because I respect him and Doug so much about the way they can talk about these records, a bunch of people on these panels, frankly, that I can be taken a certain amount away. But at some point with Ralph, especially, I go, I think you're the problem here. So I'm thinking, like, you are really trying way too hard, and you've convinced yourself way too hard. And I think I'm noticing that your argument is kind of flawed. Even though you can argue this so well that Phil Collins is a genius on all these solo albums, I can't be taken there. And I've seen this pattern with you so many times that I'm not sure if I have to trust you, even though you've said the most amazing things just now about these records, sort of thing. So yeah, I think I've seen it in other people as well. And I guess, like I say, is you love these bands so much. Like I say, you love this journey of what they do. So wow, I've been doing these episodes pretty long lately, right? So yeah, if you like the show and want to support future episodes, yeah, you can go to Ko-fi, hit that red support button. It's just a PayPal one time. It's not a recurring thing. It's a $3 thing, and support the show. It makes me feel like this is like a toy job, at least of some sort, or some sort of job that there is value that people are attaching to it. So you can go to ko-fi.com/martinpopoff, hit that red support button. This week, I would like to thank Andy at Black Sugar Transmission. I think he's back from all his touring stuff. Pretty cool. Peter Kerr went and met up with him in Australia. That was awesome. Joe Becht, Lee Fox, Clifford, Monty Olson, Augustine Garcia de Pretty, Steve Polari, John Stuckey, and Daryl Woodard. Thank you all very much. This week's been a busy week on the book front. We've got the new Van Halen at 50, and we've got the Led Zeppelin visual biography just in. So I'm soon as I'm done here, I got to pack up a bunch of that stuff and get it out the door. But yeah, all your book stuff, martinpopoff.com. You know, I've been doing those little illustrations and stuff too. We've got the illustrations in print form from the Imagino series, and my drawings of rock stars and all that. You can go to martinpopoff.ca and see all that stuff if you want. And yeah, I'll make that offer again. Anybody wants to buy a book, I'll throw in some show notes with those as well. You can see how we put this thing together. There you go. Go listen to some overrated albums, or albums that just don't deserve the love, or albums that we just all try too hard to love too much.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.